Okay, we're going to call the Education Committee to order. Today's February 12th, time's 8:04. In attendance today is co-chair Thomas.
Too many committees. Right?
Yes, the vice chair Davis and our Senate president Stevens and myself, co-chair Meyer. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank everybody for being here. On today's agenda, I think we'll go ahead and finish up on Senate Bill 236, which was the tax credits for contributions for educational purposes. And also after that, I'd like to get to Senate Bill 209, an act providing the Alaska State Council on the Arts the authority to adopt regulations relating to statutory powers and duties. So, and I also want to welcome Senator Huggins. So with that, Mr. Co-Chair, the Chair would entertain a motion that the committee take up the CS for 236.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee take up committee substitute for Senate Bill 236, version 26-LS1191/W.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, then we had the CS before us as the working document. And with us today, we're fortunate to have both of our committee aides here. I'm going to ask my committee aide, Jomo Stewart, to walk through the changes on the CS for the committee. Mr. Stewart?
For the record, my name is Jomo Stewart, committee aide to the Senate Education, Senate Education Committee. Before us, we have working draft W, and I'll just briefly walk through the changes between the original version, the one that's online, and this work draft. The very first change is right at the top in the title. The original bill spoke of, tax credits for cash contributions by taxpayers to certain educational purposes and college facilities. Now it simply says educational purposes and facilities. So facilities, both college, collegiate and non-collegiate, as long as it's for an educational purpose. Section 1, a new Section 1 was added, which is the director's annual report. As we discussed Monday, 236 impacts a number of different tax brackets and different sections of law, and by being operated by two separate departments. Department of Commerce takes care of Division of Insurance, which can get tax credits, and Department of Revenue takes care of your normal run of taxes. So the director's report is from the director of the Division of Insurance under the Department of Commerce. Okay. We'll give a yearly report. Section 2 is when you have the changes proper from the existing statute to what we're hoping to achieve. It speaks to down on page 2, line 27, facilities, secondary school level vocational educational facilities, line 28 for vocational education courses, programs, and facilities operated by the state. And then on line 30, for facilities by nonprofit, public or private, for a two-year college or four-year college accredited by a regional accreditation association. So that's the third major change. Okay, now we go to Section 3, and this is where the fun begins. concern had been voiced because we had put a sunset date in to the original piece of legislation, or one of the changed versions, that we might inadvertently lose a good thing while trying to make it better. As in, if we sunsetted the entire program, if it wasn't reauthorized, we would lose not only the new sections and the new credits, but we would also lose the credits that have been in existence for over 20 years. So throughout the bill, you'll see that the size of it has almost doubled. Because the drafters said in order to do that kind of reversion, we would actually have to write into the new statute what the old language was, so that if you don't reauthorize the new language, it simply reverts back to the old language. So that's what Section 3 is it simply a restatement of what is already in existing statute. Sections 4 and 5 speak to the increased tax credits, or actually the giving of tax credits for amounts in excess of $200,000. Again, if you remember in current statute, anything above $200,000 is essentially ignored, but again, we've been trying to either remove or move that cap. So again, this is the 50% tax credit for values above the $200,000. And then in the new Section 6, which begins on page 4, is where we speak to the new cap. It had been pondered by the committee and members to possibly try to put on a hard and fast cap to limit the exposure of the Treasury. But in my conversations with the Department of Revenue and others, it became clear that it would be virtually impossible to set that kind of hard and fixed cap. So what we've done instead is to simply raise the existing cap from its current $150,000 to $25 million. One other change that has been included at the recommendation of Ledge Legal. As you can see on line 5, there's an inclusion of the phrase, the basis for a credit. By the read of Ledge Legal, existing statute left it unclear whether it was referring to a cap on contributions or credits. And they've tried to clean up the existing language so that it is clear that what we're capping are the credits at $25 million and not contributions, of which a donor can make as high as they choose. Okay. Let's see. Section 7 is, again, a restatement of statute, existing statute for the reversion. Section 8 is included language, which says that credits under this section may not reduce a person's tax liability below zero in any given tax year, and that unused credits or portions of credits may not be sold, traded, transferred, or rolled over into subsequent years. So tax credits that are acquired in a year must be used within that year. Okay? And then finally, when we go to page, 5, or it's actually the bottom of page 4 and page 5, the section 9 is, again, a restatement of the basis for credits. The contributions don't cap the new cap at $25 million. The last of the real changes come at the very, very end of the CS on page 17. Sections 49, 50, and 51. And those are what make operational the reversion. So it speaks to the new language being repealed on a certain date, reverting back to the old language if not reauthorized.
Okay, I think, Mr. Stewart, and again, I think the concern was by having a hard sunset date in there that we may discourage some donations. Sometimes a person, entity, corporation want to make their contribution over a 3 or 4 year period, and so if there's a sunset date in there, that might discourage them from doing that, and we certainly didn't want to. Any questions of the changes in the CS? Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think that answers the question, and maybe you can expand on it a little bit, but there was some concern that if a very big corporation wanted to come in and build a new science building on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus, that this would allow them to do that, and it would probably be over what was the amount that you had as a total. They could donate anything, but they only get a certain amount of tax credits,
right.
And so that would allow that to possibly happen. And I think that's a definite step forward. And thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. What this would allow them to do is to contribute $25 million each year for as many years as they are comfortable doing.
$25 million each year? Or
actually, they could donate.
They could donate as much as you want.
It would be more like $50 million. Mm-hmm. For a $50 million contribution, essentially a 50% tax credit, they could accrue $25 million for the tax credit. So it almost does set a cap on donations, but not really. They're allowed. They, of course,
price,
they donate as much
the
as
the price
they
of the science building in Fairbanks, do you recall?
100, 100, 109.
That's right.
Senator Thomas, that's your thing.
$109 million.
So this would allow a corporation, should there be one so generous out there, to have their name on a building.
That's right.
Yeah.
They could certainly contribute a substantial amount.
The Senator Thomas building, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's not try. We got in problems with trying to name things a few years ago, didn't we?
You got $109 million, don't you? Senator Huggins.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Mo, thanks for the explanation. As I look in Section 2, on page 2, when you look at the different sort of categories of institutions or operating, you know, education pieces that qualify, if they're less than 1-2 years, they don't qualify. And I'm it says state operated. We're looking at it, and the question: are there some things that are out there that are training courses that are less than 2 years, but not state operated, that we want to be eligible?
Respectfully, through the chair, my name is Murray Richmond, and I'm the committee aide for education. There are a number of vocational schools that are federally run. through different programs. A lot of them deal with the AGEA program that's coming up, and they're training people for the workforce. And under the current legislation, those are not. I had an extensive talk with Jim Sampson, who's involved in that, yesterday. We have a list of those. It would take a major reworking of part of these statutes to get that in there, because they are not locally accredited. Some of them do not offer certificates. Right. They do take people and they train them to do certain jobs, and then once they're trained to do the job, they're fit for the job market, but they don't necessarily need a certificate to do that. And so those, under this current statute, those would be exempt from receiving private donations.
And I accept that. I'm willing to bet my Diet Coke that there are some that aren't federal, that are less than 2 years, that we need to address. And that's my question. Not about federal. I accept that. But let's, just to make sure that we're comprehensive in what we're doing, because my assumption, I talked to Mr. McDonald and Mr. Jensen, and there are, in the case of them, case in point, there are truck drivers that go to schools that are less than 2 years that we might want to have benefit from this. I don't know that. I'm not lobbying for them, but the point is, there are lots of others that you and I may not be aware of, but categorically, we just can't, you know, have them managed out of the state statutes if we're doing this.
Go ahead, Senator. Mr. Stewart.
Respectfully to the chair, I mean, really what we're dancing around is on page 2, line 28, the Vocational Education Centers, Programs, and Facilities. Currently, as far as the 2 year or 4 year, that's referring simply to a college. That's the distribution mechanism. Generally, we have colleges that are considered 2 year or 4 year.
Right.
Which is to say, associates or full
yeah,
degree.
Yeah, but it says, degree. But the problem with 28 and 29 is that state operated.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's kind of like it's all government per se, and once again we narrow the category. That may be the right answer. I'm not so sure that's the right answer, but if that's what we want to do, that's okay. But I'm not so sure. That's not my point. Is if there are people getting trained out there someplace, if somebody wants to donate to that, and we want to allow them a tax credit for that, we need to have the provision here.
Respectfully, through the chair, they would have to be a nonprofit organization to do that, and so if they're not. Depending on how if a private company set up a training center to train people that would later they would be eligible to become welders or things like that, they would not be eligible for the tax credit.
And I understand that. The point one more time is that you can be nonprofit, not be state operated.
That's correct. Really, this dances around the question of accreditation. We were trying to, again, the real discussion is, we want to ensure that the donations are going to places that are reputable and that are going to provide a certain level of training and expertise on the back end. And accreditation is a way of putting that seal of approval on a program, right, to say that they do have the facilities and the capacity to generate those trained people. Ms. Diane Behrens is here, though, from we actually were having a discussion regarding the ACPE, and they have a list of businesses and training centers for different occupations that the state does list, Directory of Career and Technical Schools in Alaska. They're not really accredited, and you couldn't really say that they're certified, but by being on the list, to get on the list, you have to have a certain minimal standard of curriculum and capacity. So she is here to answer questions and might be able to speak more authoritatively to your question. In our discussions, if I may continue, Mr. Chairman, in our discussions, knowing that there's this sizable amount of tax credit out there, it may be an incentive for a number of these training courses like Carlisle's Trucking to seek a certification or an accreditation, because there are multiple accreditation agencies around the country. It's just that no one has needed to seek that accreditation, and perhaps, again, having this sizable amount of capital available, it may be an incentive to go ahead and seek that final certification of quality.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, just to follow up, then, they used to work for Ms. Behrens is the VA accreditation. They now work for DMVA, and I don't think that they're the qualifiers on the list that you have, but there are a number of locations that there are people that visit from our state for the accreditation process that I would assume would be eligible, or we would want them to be eligible because they're accredited and the VA's paying for it, you know, for people to go. If we want to give them a tax credit for other people to go, then we'd want to entertain that. So.
respectfully to the chair. It is within the committee's power to, if it wanted to, simply strike state operated and say a vocational technical education or training school certified by the state. Now then you'd be in the pickle of having to set up some kind of certification program. But again, it's I can understand why policymakers would want to be able to ensure some level of quality on the back end, the capacity to generate that quality.
I think we all agree on that.
And okay,
one other, if I might, and we discussed this earlier, but it's the breakdown of the 50%, 100%, 50%. I've talked to a number of people about it, and they're like me, have a question of how we came up with a scheme of a sweet spot of 100% right in the middle, when my take was we would want to up the 100% factor to get people to give more, not have them settle for less donation.
Hey, that's a good question, Senator Huggins, and I'll let Jomo answer that. But we went around and around on that, on where is the right break, and should you have a sliding scale, for example?
Right, because, I mean, the people that I thought had the best rationale for it, and I talked to Mr. Johnson about it also, was that you could raise the number above 200, and if they want to only want to give 200, they still get the 100 percentile, but we potentially could get a greater contribution for them because they would see the benefit. So,
okay. Yeah, I think the thought was that we might pick up a few more smaller guys if we left it the way it is. But Mr. Stewart, go ahead.
That's about it, sir. I mean, what was the high end has become a sweet spot. If you recall from the original statute, the 100% kicked in from $100,000 to $200,000, and they were essentially capped at $200,000. Again, we've had this discussion to possibly removing that sweet spot, but we do want to encourage giving, and it certainly encourages giving of a certain type. This would probably be less like the $100,000 to $200,000 range would probably be less likely to be like a ConocoPhillips or one of the larger CH2M Hill, but more likely would be a private individual, a private donor, or a family trust.
Right.
And we would probably like to go ahead and keep encouraging that kind of,
yeah,
of generosity.
Think about specifically, instead of having 200,000, it's 250 or 300. You can still give 125 if you want. Doesn't cause people, doesn't push people out of the circle. It just would encourage them to give a bit more. So anyway, just food for thought.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Huggins. And then I'm going to go Senator Stevens, but I know Diane Behrens has, I think, some more to
ask. Actually, the question would be for her, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your question would be for her.
Well, I think it'd be well for us to discuss accreditation just a little bit. I was happened to be chairman of an accreditation committee that led to being accredited for my campus, and through the Northwest Accreditation, and I'm sure Diane knows the name of it, but I've forgotten it. But anyway, it's not an easy thing to do. It's extremely difficult and caused great turmoil at the University of Alaska as we attempted to get accreditation, and all did. But accreditation, in my view, from a regional accreditation association, is a very high standards, and I'm not sure, but what I'm sort of hearing is are we talking about maybe being accredited by, a flying organization or pilot organization? That's not the same thing as a regionally accredited association. So I want to make sure that we, in fact, are talking about a substantial, major regional accreditation society that really has great meaning behind it, and we're not creating a diploma mill of some kind.
Ms. Behrens.
For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, what you're saying is exactly correct. If you were to create sort of a tier of, at least in terms of perception, the highest quality regional accreditation would be the highest standard. One thing to bear in mind, however, is that they typically only accredit public institutions. Or actually public or nonprofit colleges. There are a number of national accreditation associations that are approved by the U.S. Secretary of Education for the purposes of recognizing a school to participate in the Title IV federal student financial aid. Typically, that is a standard that is seen as acceptable. The difference between accreditation is typically a national accreditation provides a school with an ability to issue diplomas and degrees that are terminal degrees. They're not transferable. The credits earned there won't transfer to a public or private four-year institution for the purposes of transcripting. So I think there are other standards. Short of accreditation, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education does have a statutory authority to authorize institutions to operate in Alaska. We also have the authority to exempt certain institutions from authorization. And those exempt institutions basically are offering short courses. They don't necessarily offer a vocational certificate of any kind, but they're just not considered to be sufficient in either depth or length to move somebody onto a career pathway, so they are exempted. There's also certain religious institutions that can be exempted if all they offer are religious awards that lead to service within a particular church.
Senator Stevens.
So, Mr. Behrens, your reading of this would be that we are not opening up this up to diploma mills that are just there to give diplomas for no real work done. And those do exist, but this is what does not open it to that.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, no, it doesn't. To Senator Huggins' question, though, even an institution that seeks accreditation through one of the national organizations that's recognized by the U.S. Secretary would not qualify under this standard.
Okay. Anything else, Senator Stevens?
No, thank you.
Senator Huggins, any follow-up from Ms. Behrens?
Well, no, but I think what Ms. Behrens just pointed out, there's a sizable number of potential sites where people are trained that I assume the quality, if they're accredited by a mechanism, that we need to at least consider them and not just by some narrow language exclude them, unless we really do want to exclude them. And I guess I would ask for Ms. Behrens' recommendation on that.
Ms. Behrens.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, as I see the key issue, you're really talking about a tax policy. And so I would not have a particular opinion on what types of institutions the legislature would want to grant tax credits to. I do believe that you are correct in saying that there are institutions that are accredited otherwise than by a regional accreditation that provide a quality education that leads to placement in a field or career.
Anything else, Senator Huggins? Yeah, if I recall, our discussion on this was that we wanted to have some check and balance in place so that, you know, you couldn't just give a tax credit to something frivolous. And so we wanted to have some kind of standard in place. Whether this is the right standard or not, I guess, is up to the committee. Any other questions for Ms. Behrens? Thank you. Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, just thinking aloud here, and I appreciate Senator Huggins' comments. But, for example, if a trucking association wanted to establish a program that would lead to some kind of certification for truckers, the potential would be there for them to work with the Seward Skill Center or the university or APU or anybody, I would think.
Yeah, I would agree, Senator Stevens. And in that way, too, it gives us some assurance that there is some kind of quality check in place there if they're working with a college or Botech school or something. Okay, well, you know, we can certainly still make some changes to the numbers if you're not comfortable with the 100,000, 200,000.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just recommend we have a list of donors and just you know, do some consulting with them about, you know, what the benefits are of adjusting the numbers. We may not want to adjust them, but I don't think just because we have the number on paper that if we can encourage people to give more money with some degree of confidence that we're going to get a payback factor in education, I think we should look at that.
Okay. Would you like to have some more time to work with donors and see what that magic number is, or are you comfortable?
Well, I mean, I'll propose an amendment that the number on line 21 be changed to
page,
on page 3 be changed from 200,000 to 300,000.
Line 21.
Right.
I'm sorry, line 21?
Right.
200,000, 250,000?
300.
Okay.
And just for explanation of that, for those small donors that still just want to give 200, they can do that. But if there's a donor that would be attracted by the tax incentive to give 300,000, we get a benefit from that.
Okay, so your motion would be to, on line 21, page 3, to change 200,000 to 300,000.
Correct.
Okay, very good. So we'll call that amendment number 1. And I'll object to it so we can discuss. I think you gave your rationale on that. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like for your staff to come up and speak to the increased amount on there. Is it going to meet the intent that we had planned, or is there going to be some changes that's going to be made? Somebody needs to speak to that.
Okay. Mr. Stewart or Mr. Murray?
Respectfully to the chair, just so I'm clear, we're talking page 3, mm-hmm. lines 20 and 21.
21.
Yeah, line 21, right.
Okay, it would actually be lines 20 and 21, because if you bumped
yes.
it.
Yes, correct.
Yes, sir, okay. Respectfully to the chair, I think it still meets the intent. I had some concern with changing too many of the percentages. It appeared that some of the resistance and reluctance by Department of Revenue is that the more credits you give at higher values, the more exposure the Treasury has. Whereas now it's a straight 50% all the way through. If, say, you know, a sliding scale up to $100 million, where they would get a 100% tax break for $100 million, that's quite a big tax break. Where again, at 50%, you're always insisting on a little altruism on their part as well. I don't know. Again, I personally wouldn't have any problem, although I have no firm opinion on bumping the number to 300,000. I just know that, again, the more you start moving that 100% value around, or certainly the wider you make that 100% value, the less room for altruism you have.
Okay. Respectfully, Mr. through the chair, this is a new program in terms of getting people to donate these high numbers. And we could study past behavior, but that wouldn't necessarily predict what they would do with a certain tax credit. So I think to check, there's annual reporting doing this, and if we're finding that we haven't hit the sweet spot, I think in 3 years when the bill is up for revision, that could certainly be taken care of. I think this is something we're going to need to check as we go instead of something.
Yeah, I don't know there's a right answer, but we're here because we're trying to raise the limits.
Right.
And in the spirit of that, I think this is one of the areas that, I mean, quite frankly, if somebody gives us more money, we still win because their tax write-off is, we just win because of what we're creating.
Yeah. Senator Huggins, I think this number is fine, and as was mentioned, I think we get annual reviews, don't we, of who's donating and how much, and then we can adjust if we find we need to. But yeah, this should even help the smaller guys, encourage them to give a little bit more, and that's what we're trying to do. So.
Yeah, and just one more, Mr. Chair. I mean, that's the beauty of what we're doing here is what a donor came to us and says, look, we want to get more than that. Why don't you think about, so let's think about that. And we've done that, and I'm proud of what we're doing.
Okay. Very good. I certainly don't have any objections to your amendment. Any other objections or questions, comments? Senator Stevens?
No question on that, but I would like to go back and maybe after we take care of this and review the issue of the sunset.
Okay.
A separate issue.
Okay. Can do that. Okay. Any objections to the amendment number 1? I guess this would be a conceptual amendment since we don't have it in writing, but that's fine.
Oh.
Revenue. You any? For the record, please.
Yes. For the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm with the Department of Revenue. And on line 20, where it says 100% of the next 100,000 of contributions, that needs to be changed to 200,000 if you want
correct.
To increase.
Correct. That is correct. That would be technically
okay.
Right, yes.
That hadn't been stated, yes. So I wanted to make sure that that would be yep. Adjusted so there wouldn't be any confusion between 200 and 300.
Thanks, Ginger.
Okay, thank you, Ginger. Okay, Senator Stevens.
Could we go back to the issue of the sunset, just to make sure I understand
okay.
it?
Okay, so there's no objection, so then amendment number one passes. Now, we'll go on to the sunset.
So you've said, Mr. Chairman, there will be a three-year review of how this program has worked. But you were talking about a 20-review the sunset issue, but we saw, I understand. There's a 20-year span we're talking about so that someone could invest, and maybe you can explain that better to me.
Respectfully, through the chair, we realize that this does reduce revenues to the state, and not knowing exactly what impact that's going to have overall, if we had a lot of people come in and want to give large donations, then the hit could be significant. I agree with Senator Huggins that we're still better off in many ways, even though we have done that. This gives us a chance to review what effect this has on the budget. If it has a negative effect, and we can't predict the future, then we revert back to what we had before, which seems to be working well. It's just not good enough yet. And it gives us a chance to make sure that we are crafting legislation that's better than what we had. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, somebody mentioned a 20-year period. Where does that come in?
No, the tax credits have been in statute for quite a while.
Yeah,
the existing tax credits. Mm-hmm. This program has been in operation for decades.
Yeah.
And again, it's the last line. It says Section 51. And simply what it says is, we would come back in like we did with the debt bond reimbursement, where they would simply push this 2014 date back. As long as everyone's comfortable with the way the program is now operating at those higher values.
Maybe I'm missing something. Somebody said 20 years. What was 20 years all about?
I did. I said 20 years. Simply that this is, again, these tax credits have been in statute for over 20 years.
Oh, I see. Okay.
As they stand current.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think we want to avoid the sunset because if you hit the sunset, then the program goes away entirely. You know, we don't want the program to go away. If worst case, we want it to go back to the way it is now. Senator Thomas?
That's exactly. I was just going to try and clarify that was the intent, that it would go back to where it is prior to what we're doing today.
Right.
During the sunset, or at the point of sunset, unless the sunset was removed. Yeah, exactly.
Very good. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is a little larger question, I think, that we ought to think about as the Senate and as the legislature. There are lots of discussions going on about tax credits, and what we don't have is a philosophical umbrella which we operate under for tax credits. As you remember, the first one we did was the film industry, mm-hmm. and we're now dealing here, and we got geothermal in one location, and so my point is that it'd be my recommendation, probably through LBNA or some mechanism where we have a consulting review to sort of shape what tax credits in the state of Alaska, what we're seeking for in different areas, so that we're kind of leveling the playing field mentally of what we're doing. So,
yeah, Senator Huggins, I think you bring up a good point. And I guess we don't know what the true impact is going to be to all these tax credits until we see which legislation gets passed. I know ATIA also has a tax credit
exactly.
for tourism. And I don't know, I don't know if that's a finance where you look at the big picture and the and what the credits and how it's going to impact Treasury, or if that's an LBNA project or the interim. But we do need to look at that. I agree. Okay, any other discussion, questions, amendments?
Anyone from the university to speak to this? I would think that they'd be the institution most likely to be impacted.
They spoke the last time, if I recall. I don't remember who spoke, but they're very supportive. Is that correct?
It was actually Mary Rutherford with the UA Foundation.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
One minor. With the change we just made, the amendment that was made, does that affect any of the $150,000 that then recurs continually through the rest of the?
Yes, sir. When I put in the amendment, I assumed that was the intent of the committee, so I'll make sure it is replaced everywhere it touches the bill.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's good point, Senator Thomas. I think the committee has hopefully given us the latitude then to make the necessary adjustments to all the numbers based on that amendment. Is that Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. There's one other thought that I had here a couple days ago was, and I'm not suggesting holding up the legislation, but we're working on the governor's scholarship program. Mm-hmm. And I would think that would be a minimum threshold that would qualify for credits, where people could take money that we're going to send students to, that if for some reason they're not in this, we need to think about that, because those should be congruent. I don't think we can justify not having some congruency in that. But I don't want to slow the legislation up to do that. But at some point in time, we need to get some alignment on that.
Mr. Stewart?
Respectfully to the chair, existing statute allows these corporations to donate to endowments or create endowments. So really, any one of these corporations could set up an endowment to give out scholarships, either in conjunction with or in parallel with the governor's scholarship program.
I understand. I don't want to preclude them from tax credits, though.
No, they would get tax credits, and they could do that under existing statute.
I understand.
Just only up to $150,000 currently.
Okay. Very good. Any other comments? Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 236, version 26LS1191-W, as amended, be moved from the Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, bill moves out of committee. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Mr. Stewart, Mr. Murray. As we sign the book, I would ask Senator Menard to please come forward. And it looks like you got your trusty staff with you. Okay. Let's see what we got here. Make sure I have your bill first. Yeah, 209. Mm-hmm. I don't have a number on mine, do you? Okay. No, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, next we'll take up Senate Bill 209, an act providing the Alaska State Council on the Arts the authority to adopt regulations relating to statutory powers and duties. Senator Menard is the sponsor, and she's going to introduce the bill along with her trusty staff. Welcome to the Education Committee, Senator
Thank you,
Menard.
Mr. Chairman. Indeed, it's a privilege to be able to bring forward Senate Bill 209. Senate Bill 209 will provide the Alaska State Council on the Arts the authority to adopt regulations regarding to its statutory powers and duties. The bill has been introduced at the request of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, which is the last frontier state arts agency created over 40 years ago. Several of the Council's programs are governed by regulations which the Council has followed and updated over the years. Recently, the Arts Council has sought to improve the streamline in its grant-making policies, procedures, and regulations. In the course of this effort, the Council was informed by the Department of Law that it technically does not have the statutory authority to adopt regulations under the Administrative Procedures Act. While this legal opinion is at odds with their long-standing practice, the Council considered and took serious the advice from the Attorney General's office and determined that the best way to rectify the current situation is to amend its enabling statute to allow it explicit statutory authority to adopt regulations. This legislation will, in essence, codify existing practice and will enable the Alaska State Council on the Arts to continue to administer and oversee its existing programs. And any of all regulations adopted in the future will have to comply with the review of public notice provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act. This bill has a zero fiscal note and will help the Alaska State Council on the Arts to continue performing its long-standing missions of helping more Alaskans appreciate, create, and enjoy the art. Probably the best example of regulations are 20AAC 30 2016-010-30.061, which govern all of our grant programs. Each of the grant programs in the agency have regulations specific to those grants, which outline the purpose of the grants and the application process, deadlines, eligibility, and limitations. And I do have in the audience here with me today to answer any specific questions is Ben Brown. He is the chair of the State Council on the Arts, and Rebecca Hatton with the Department of Law.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Senator Bernard. Questions from the committee? Senator Thomas?
No, I was just going to say, sounds like a good idea that we get in line with what law says we're supposed to be doing.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you. No, it sounds like a good idea to me, but on the other hand, I'm not familiar with councils. What other councils do regulations and administer that would mirror what we're talking about here?
I would defer then to Rebecca, Department of Law, because I don't have that answer for you.
Okay, looks like we have Rebecca here. So, Rebecca, if you want to join us, please.
It's singular. It's singular.
Welcome. If you could, for the record, state your name and affiliation, please.
Sure. My name is Rebecca Hatton, and I'm with the Department of Law. It's a good question, and respectfully through the chair. The line of cases that the Department of Law is concerned about centered around commissions as opposed to councils, but particularly the Real Estate Commission, but I can't specifically name another council that promulgates regulations.
Hello, Senator Hurley?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the concept, I think, is a good one, but I mean, I guess you now beg the question whether we should call a commission versus change, you know, the provisions which they operate under as a council. So that if we have a bunch of councils suddenly come in and say, we want to write regulations. I don't know anything about councils, but I mean, we don't need to open the door up to, if there's 25 councils, there only may be one, but if there are and we open up something that hasn't been practiced, but you know, the arts has been, I think, in good practice, but on the other hand, we don't need to open a floodgate to something that unintended consequences, I guess, would be a short answer.
Okay. Go ahead and stay there. Senator Thomas?
I was trying to find where Senator Huggins is looking at. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we're looking at the second page, I just lost track of where I was looking just now. I think that if that was the case, we could repeat the same ASCA and maybe take care of that issue of it being seeming like it was plural. If that's the question, I'm not sure if it is or not.
Well, yeah, it just, if I might, Mr. Chair, on line two, or correction, page two, line five, says adopt regulations. So, I mean, that may or not be a good thing, but if there are others out there that read and say, me too, and that's not our intent, we just need to understand what we're doing.
I mean, the authority to adopt regulations just generally, it's purely a creature of statute. And so the fact that AS 4427 is specifically limited to the Council on the Arts, I understand your concern, but given how that the authority to promulgate regulations flows directly from statute.
I understand. Yeah, that's limiting. Yeah, thank you.
Right.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, very good. Senator Stevens?
So if I understand, Ben Brown has been doing this for years, and we're finally going to say it's okay to keep doing what he's been doing. Has he done anything wrong?
I don't think so. I think the best way to move forward, just to be cautious, would be for the council to readopt all of their existing regulations to eliminate any questions about their validity.
Thanks.
Okay, very good. Well, maybe at this time we should talk to Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks to Senator Bernard for sponsoring this legislation, and to Mr. Revito for all his work, and to Ms. Hatton for being here to answer those difficult questions, making my job, I think, easier now.
Okay. Oh, no, slow down.
So Benjamin Brown for the Alaska State Council on the Arts.
Very good. Thank you.
To put it in a bigger context, the council doesn't have a great number of programs that require regulations, but those programs that it does have definitely do require them. The most is our re-grant program, where we give out a couple of $100,000 a year to small arts organizations across the state. Valley Performing Arts, the Kodiak Arts Council, Fairbanks Drama Association, or arts organizations all across Anchorage, the state's largest city, and certainly here in the capital city of Juneau. The biggest grant is $21,000. It's a small but vital piece of these organizations' budgets. They have to apply for that money in a manner that's prescribed by the regulations. The regulations, with all due respect to Senator Stevens through the chair, predated my being appointed to the council 7 years ago by Governor Murkowski. And we haven't changed them greatly since.
We can still blame you.
Yes, and that's what I'm here for through the chair, Senator Stevens. We haven't really tried to change the grant regulations until about a year and a half ago. We decided we wanted to streamline them. We don't want organizations spending a lot of time filling out paperwork for a $21,000 grant every year if they can do it every other year, or indeed on a triennial basis. And it's when we as a council decided to try to move to a more efficient, user-friendly grant procedure that we realized some of the rules were in regs, and we went to change the regs, and Mr. Slotnick at the Department of Law came back and said, hold on, you don't have the technical authority to adopt the regulations. And we thought, well, that's not good because we've already adopted them. So we decided the best thing to do after weighing it as a council was simply to come and ask the legislature to give us the specific authority as this one council to adopt regulations that implement our existing statutes. Actually, Mr. Lampkin, who works for Senator Stevens, is in the back of the room. Several of you may remember a couple of years ago we had a bill that dealt with our Silver Hand program. Mm-hmm. It also has regulations that implement the statutes, and those need to have the force of law to combat fraud and protect the integrity of the Alaska Native art market. So it's not a huge amount of power that this council has, but the specific activities that we engage in to improve the lives of Alaskans by making more arts available require that our regulations have the force of law. And that, in a nutshell, is why we're here before you today. To return, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Huggins' question about councils, that's really a question of nomenclature. All 50 states and the other jurisdictions have arts agencies that have been created in response to the National Endowment of the Arts creation back in 1967. In Hawaii, it's called a foundation. In California, it's a commission. In Alaska, it's a council. They're really all state arts agencies, and so we could change the name, but we've been a council for 40 years, and I don't know that that's going to change a great number of things. I think Ms. Hatton answered the specific question that this statute only applies to ASCA, and so there's not going to be any sort of seepage, and anything else called a council isn't going to be able to come in through the back door and try to adopt regulations, I don't think. So that, trying to address the comments that had been voiced before I came to the table here, is there anything else I could answer for any of the committee members, Mr. Chairman?
Okay, well, let me, stay put. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, just one question. Mr. Brown, were you the author of an article I saw in the paper recently?
Yes, through the chair, I do a column every other week in the Juneau Empire.
Well written.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Was there any other questions for the sponsor? I'm assuming not, so we'll go to public testimony. I noticed you were signed up for public testimony. Did you just give it?
I think I've given all the testimony I could possibly hope to give, although if there are any questions, by all means, okay. I'm happy to answer
them. Yes, we have the expert here. Any questions? Okay. Seeing none, and thank you for what you do for the arts.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you.
Okay, was there anybody else who wanted to testify? Anybody else online? Okay. Anybody here in Juneau? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any additional questions for the sponsor or for our experts in the audience? Comments? Committee members?
So, Mr. Chairman, I just want to note that this is going to judiciary after this committee, so some of those technical issues could be addressed there.
Okay, good. This one's not going to finance? What happened, Senator Stevens?
It's trying to keep anything we can out of finance.
Okay. I don't think there is a fiscal note. I'm not sure I have it, though. Is there a zero fiscal note? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So if there's no other comments, questions, and Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 209, version 26-LS1236/A, be moved from the Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations. And there is no fiscal note, so.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, then the bill moves out of committee. Thank you, Senator Menard. Ben? Okay.
You're welcome.
Good job, Senator.
Good girl.
Our next meeting will be Monday, February 15th. I believe that is a holiday, and I apologize. I'm looking at our support staff there. But we will be meeting tomorrow, or the 15th, at 8 o'clock, this room. We'll be taking up the Governor's Performance Scholarship Program again. Wrestle with that a little bit, see if we can't come up with something that we can all live with. So if there's nothing else coming before the committee at this time, we'll stand adjourned till Monday at 8 o'clock. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.